Nobody wants to have weak bones as they age, right? It can lead to an increased risk of fractures and overall makes you more fragile. But what if we could either prevent or slow down osteoporosis with exercise? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Building Lifelong Athletes podcast. Thanks so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. And if we haven't met, I'm Jordan Reneke. I'm a double board certified physician in family and sports medicine. And the whole goal of this podcast is to help keep you active and healthy for life through actionable evidence-informed education. And today we're talking all about exercise for bone health and osteoporosis. Well, first things first, let's get started with osteoporosis and talk about what actually is osteoporosis. And the definition by the World Health Organization is it is a microarchitectural deterioration of bone tissue, consequently increasing bone fragility and susceptibility to fracture. So in real terms, it means that more bone is breaking down than being built, and it leaves you susceptible to having broken bones. So osteoporosis, not a good thing, that's for sure. When people hear about osteoporotic fractures, what that means is those people had these fragile bones, right? I'm not saying this is not fragile bone syndrome. That's a very different clinical thing. That's an actual entity like fragile bone syndrome, but it increases the risk of a fracture because it kind of decreases the quality and strength of your bone. Now, from a physiologic standpoint, bone loss kind of happens gradually. So for example, in postmenopausal women, they're at the highest risk for having osteoporosis and having these fractures. Essentially, they lose bone loss at a pretty standard ratio. I mean, about 60 to 69, they lose about 0.6% per year of their bone density. And then they have about from 70 to 79 is 1.1%. And then 80 above, it's 2.1% of their bone density. And so as you age, you start to increase the amount of bone density that you lose. And that is pretty standard. It's not fast. It's not precipitous, right? It doesn't drop off a cliff. But typically, you'll kind of see it once we hit postmenopausal women. It does have a much steeper slope in terms of how much we're losing. And so once we have that buildup reserve, that will kind of protect us later in life. And so that's kind of the whole pinning of preventing it and whatnot there. But long story short is that it happens gradually, but steadily after we reach a certain age. And this is males and females, but we're just at a higher risk for postmenopausal women. And like we talked about kind of the definition before, what it does from the pathophysiology perspective, what's happening is there's an abnormally high response of osteoclasts when compared to osteoblasts. And if you go back to anatomy and physiology, we have osteoblasts that build bones. So I was thinking about blasts build bone, then osteoclasts break down bone. And in this situation with when we have osteoporosis, we have more osteoclast activity than osteoblast. So essentially, you kind of think about the teeter-totter, seesaw. On one side, you know, when we're at homeostasis, we are having enough blast build and clastic kind of resorbing it, and it's neutral. And then eventually something happens to tilt the scales where, hey, we're having too much osteoclast activity, and that is tearing down the bone. And that's pretty much like literally all recovery in life in terms of any stress and strain relationship. You know, we want to keep in homeostasis. And this one, we're kind of favoring breaking down. So that's essentially what's happening. And there are definitely some known risk factors. Like I mentioned, females in postmenopausal age, this is the highest risk factor for it. Estrogen itself usually helps with bone health. So when we have postmenopausal, you know, relationship there, usually we have a decrease in estrogen that can play, you know, in response to that. Also, if you have immobility, like you're wheelchair bound or bed bound, or you have disuse, we know after a casting one like that, we see decrease in like the bone health. So that can be it. Also, different hormonal issues can also happen. So lots of risk factors that we typically have. And in terms of a financial impact, it's just worthwhile to talk about this. The U.S. spent $57 billion on this in 2018, and I predicted about $95 billion in 2040. So $95 billion in 2040 spending on osteoporosis, and not just necessarily osteoporosis, but the sequelae from that, because that's really what we get into. Like if you have osteoporosis and you're just walking around and like that's not really costing anybody anything. Maybe if you're on a medication because we found it on a screening, then yeah, we'll give you the medication. That might cost some money. But what they're talking about is the morbidity from this is when you have osteoporosis, you have a high risk of fractures. And when you fractures, bad stuff happens, whether you fracture your hip and that leads to surgery, then hospitalizations and all this stuff. So that is what they're getting this money from and saying, hey, it's all these things, including all the morbidity from having osteoporosis and the fractures that happen after that. And like I mentioned, you might be walking around with osteoporosis and never know. And that's the majority of people, honestly, is we're not going to know. But how do we diagnose this in clinic? Well, we get something called a DEXA scan, which DEXA is short for dual energy x-ray absorptimetry. So super fun there. I just say DEXA because that's way easier. So a DEXA scan is a type of x-ray. It's looking at the femoral head of the hip and then the lower spine. Typically, you may also look at the wrist as well. What it does essentially uses x-rays. It bounces them off and says, hey, based off of this is how the x-rays balance and whatnot. They give you a score to judge how dense the bones are and how strong the bones are. And from there, then we use something either called a T score or a Z score to compare how dense your bone is to something else to make the diagnosis. So we take that DEXA, right? We shoot the X-rays. We look back and say, hey, what is this bone density? And we base off of this T or Z. And the T score compares your values to a quote unquote normal healthy 30-year-old. So we have a standard value that we use for this normal healthy 30-year-old. And then we compare and look at it and say, hey, what does yours look like compared to them? We typically use this in patients who are above the age of 50. So when you're above the age of 50, if we have, we use the T score to kind of determine that that's off of a normal, healthy 30-year-old. Whereas the Z score compares bone density to people in the same age, same sex, and are typically used for patients less than 50. So T is kind of the set standard to a 30-year-old. Z is to kind of comparing it to the people of the same age and same sex. And to make the diagnosis, we typically have to have a greater than 2.5 in terms of standard deviation, meaning we have 2.5 standard deviations less than average. So when people are saying, hey, I have a negative 2.5, if you know the X-ray that came back, the read said you had -3 at the femoral neck or whatnot, then okay, then we can make the diagnosis of osteoporosis. Whereas if we're between 1 and 2.5, then we call osteopenia, which is not quite osteoporosis, but it's knocking on the door. It's definitely a risk factor saying, hey, you're developing, going to potentially develop to osteoporosis. And so just to summarize this, it's kind of confusing, but we take a DEXA scan, right? Some X-ray, and we look at your bone density and we compare it to a standard. And if it is greater than 2.5 times or 2.5 standard deviations below that standard, then we make the diagnosis of osteoporosis. And at the end of the day, why do we really care about this? Well, we don't really care about the numbers, right? It matters what happens after that is really what we care about. And obviously we do care about numbers because then that helps prevent and all that stuff. I'm not saying we don't care about numbers, but I'm saying realistically, you can live your life and say, hey, you have osteoporosis and you have this number, but if like nothing bad happens to you from that, then it really doesn't matter. But why we care so much is because osteoporosis greatly increases your risk of sustaining a severe fracture. And that's bad. That is really bad. Not only is that not fun, but it can lead to hospitalization. And quite frankly, it can lead to lots of issues later in life. They actually have some pretty depressing stats that when people, elderly patients later in life have hip fractures, the odds of them dying within the next year are incredibly high. It's kind of stark actually. So, and it's not necessarily directly from the hip fracture, but it's the sequelae. It's the immobility from that. And then things kind of happen and snowball. So it's a huge deal. We want to prevent anything like that. And osteoporosis doesn't kill you directly, right? It's a sequelae after a fracture like that leads to this downward spiral in a health trajectory. And essentially, osteoporosis is a silent disease, and it's not found until we have a fracture a lot of times for people. So this is what we talk about scanning with people. We are able to scan and look and see and find that, and that's the goal, but we still don't have the majority of the time people just, we find out they have it after we have a fracture. I mean, all the time I've seen this, we admitted people for hip fractures, and they had no history of osteoporosis, but then you look at their X-ray and just decreased, bone mineral density decreased everywhere, and you say, oh yeah, that's osteoporosis, and the X-ray comments on as well. And so a lot of times it's a silent disease until we find it. And so now we're talking about exercise as medicine. Can we prevent osteoporosis with exercise? Well, I was able to look at one systematic review looking at that, and looked at those who were age 65 plus without osteoporosis, and then compared exercise to some other mention, whether that's another different type of exercise or some sort of placebo. And once again, 65 plus without osteoporosis. And overall, they found that there was a small but significant effect of exercise on bone health and lumbar bone mineral density, and a small non-significant effect on femoral neck bone mineral density. So they found a significant effect on the lumbar and small but not significant on the femoral neck. And they found that those who exercise more and more intensely tended to have better results, which kind of makes sense as well. And they also found that those who do multiple types of exercise seem to do better. And so it wasn't just one specific exercise. Those who kind of combine aerobic and resistance training tend to have better results. But overall, they show that those 65 plus, so this is 65 plus, right, who exercise had a smaller chance of developing osteoporosis. I think that's a big win. And so now going hand in hand with that, we talked about, hey, can we prevent it? Now the question is, let's say we have it, can we treat osteoporosis with exercise? And we're going to talk about two main mechanisms for why we think this may be helpful. Is number one, the idea is that when you exercise, you're mechanically loading the bone. And when we do that, our body adapts to the load. So just like anything else, whether it's rehab or performance, when you put some sort of stress on your body, it adapts to it. And same thing with your bones. And the other idea may be that, hey, maybe exercise actually improves your balance, and which will decrease risk of falls. And so that's kind of the two ideas. And from a mechanical loading perspective, it's not just like the pound, ground and pound. Like, you know, when we talk about weight bearing exercise, yeah, that is important because it puts a compression kind of stress on the bone, but also even resistance training, not necessarily like when you're running or weight bearing, when you're pulling stuff or doing like any sort of contraction muscle, like it has to pull from somewhere, right? Muscles can only pull. So they pull from the bone. That's where they come from. So we're stressing the bone just by doing resistance training stuff as well. And so there's a couple different modalities and how this may actually happen. And what are the results of if we can treat it? Well, it's kind of variable depending on what type of exercise is done. In specific, they looked at aerobic exercise and it kind of was mixed, meaning weight-bearing exercises, even like walking counts as that, but walking didn't seem to be enough to decrease bone mineral density loss. So we'd still have a loss of bone mineral density and it couldn't stave it off. Whereas like running, stepping, and stair climbing, things like that did actually seem to inhibit the bone mineral density reduction. So all weight-bearing exercise is not the same. It seems like a more intense, whether that's running, going on steps, something like that, that seemed to be more effective than just walking per se. Although we'll talk later, it does depend on the dose. And they also looked at strength or resistance training, and it seemed that that had a bigger impact on things, and specifically the greater intensity increased bone mineral density more. So the harder you work, the more it is. Resistance training seems to be most effective when done about 3 times a week for a year. They looked at this study, looked forward and said, hey, when people did this for 3 times a week for a year, they saw improvements. And so progressive resistance training of the lower limbs is most effective in terms of bone mineral density for the femur. And when you're going like more the kind of whole body stuff, that kind of gets through the spine as well. And at the end of the day, we're also talking about doing multi-component training, meaning, hey, weight-bearing stuff with aerobic and resistance training. And it seems like resistance training routinely looks best, but actually maybe augmented even more with things like walking, jogging, stair climbing. And so it'd be one where like, hey, how do I improve my bone mineral density the most? Then I would say that we probably do both. And one quote that I saw from the studies I thought was awesome. It says, one study even went as far as to say that individuals should not engage in aerobic training to the exclusion of resistance or balance training. And so you heard it here first. He talked about, hey, we want to have both of them. And once again, I know I'm beating a dead horse, but what does this sound a lot like? This sounds like the physical activity guidelines where we have cardiovascular training and resistance training. And you know, I saw those recommendations, like I've known them for years and years and years. And I kind of, you know, figured, yeah, that's good, like intuitively. And then just the more I've done through this podcast and this series, it's like every single time it's like, oh, this is where they're drawing all these recommendations from. It's because these wide ranging topics all seem to show benefit when we do. And so their general recommendations here were that, you know, dosing was about 30, 60 minutes a week of resistance or combined, they said combined 3 times a week for 10 months. And another thing I want to point out is they're talking about like, hey, we see these benefits over the course of 10 months, 12 months, something like that, long-term. You're not going to do 4 weeks of exercise and drastically improve your bone mineral density. You might see some small improvements, but it takes quite a while to kind of get long-term. And another type of exercise they looked at was actually vibration platforms. So essentially, like, I don't know if you've ever seen those in the gym, they're fancy, but you just stand there and people are just shaking on them. The idea is that whole body vibration stimulates mechanoreceptors of the bone and leads to osteogenesis or making more of the bone. And strangely enough, data does seem to show that vibration may be more effective than simple walking in postmenopausal women, but there's also some data showing that it's only better than placebo and negligible when comparing to exercise training. And even then, the kind of weird thing was exercise training on the vibration platform didn't seem to make any improvement outcome. So overall though, it does seem to be some improvement, but it wouldn't be my first choice. But if you're having someone, hey, like they can't really do much, maybe they're limited, but they can stand on a vibration platform, and that's gonna be better than nothing. And I thought that was kind of interesting. This is not very widespread. You don't see these in a lot of different gyms, but it is something that worth noting that, hey, there are options for people maybe who don't have as much mobility, but this is another option we think. All right, so then the next question we have is what's the best exercise for bone mineral density? And I think it's pretty clear so far that resistance training should be the staple of the training. And then we kind of have to reverse engineer what we want to improve, right? If we want to help the spine or the hip bone mineral density, then we need to be specific. For the hip specifically, we need to target lower body exercises that are weight bearing. So kind of pick your position, what you want to do. You can do lunges, squats, leg press, deadlift, plyometric jumps, all those things seem to improve it. And then from a back perspective, we still get benefits from the squats, deadlifts, lunges, things like that. But if we want some more vertebrae, maybe things like bench press, pull-ups, pulling to kind of stress the vertebrae may be helpful. And that being said, some data points that combining weight bearing and aerobics even better. So I would mix all those things, the kind of large compound movements with things like either jogging, stair climbing, maybe potentially even walking if it's long enough. And walking in and of itself didn't seem to be as beneficial, but then they said walking with strength training, that seemed to show some improvements. So once again, combining resistance training and aerobic training will be my recommendations every single time. And then the last question we're going to talk about here is how does exercise compare to medications for osteoporosis? The most common medications that we prescribe for osteoporosis are medications called bisphosphonates. They work by inhibiting bone resorption, which is very different from exercise, right? Exercise tries to build bone up. This tries to prevent additional bone loss. And the first thing we have to figure out though is what's our most important metric. If we're strictly looking at bone mineral density, then medications are gonna almost always win. And you look at the studies in terms of how much you can reverse bone mineral density with bisphosphonates, and that is a very clear winner. Like that is more effective for bone mineral density than exercise. However, that is not the whole story, right? Bone mineral density is a number, an important number, but just a number. It helps us identify risk, but doesn't tell us the whole story. At the end of the day, fracture risk is the ultimate metric for bone health because that clinically matters the most, right? Like we talked about before, BMD, bone mineral density, is a number. And yes, it helps us understand your risk, but it's just a number. Whereas fracture, that's a real thing. You've suffered a fracture, so we want to prevent fracture risk. So that's our ultimate metric. And both bisphosphonates and exercise can decrease the risk of fractures. But most times, it's not an either or situation, but rather a both and. Because clinically, if you're low, right, you have that T score less than 2.5, you know, and you have the medical standards to start your own medication. But if you're kind of in that 1 to 2.5 osteopenic area, then we kind of have some wiggle room of if we start a medication or not. But we would expect your risk of fracture to go down similar between exercise and medications, but meds will do a better job for increasing that bone mineral density. There is no like data comparing strictly exercise versus these. And so it's kind of hard to extrapolate. What I hadn't kind of looked at was, hey, what is the decrease in fracture and bone mineral density in different studies looking at exercise and different studies looking at bisphosphonates and said, hey, what was the overall percentage change? And overall bisphosphonates seemed to be better, but they kind of did overlap a little bit with exercise. So kind of depending on how you react to the bisphosphonates or how you respond to exercise, we could have overlapping there and one could be better than the other. And so that's why I say overall, I expect you to have improvements in both, probably more from a BMD perspective with the medications, bisphosphonates, but from a fracture risk, I honestly think they'd probably be similar. And once again, it goes down to it not just being bone mineral density, right? It's not just that, it's your decreasing your risk of fracture, but you're also strengthening your bones by exercising, but then also you're improving your balance and coordination, decreasing risk of falling and having an ultimate fracture. And so that's why for me, it's probably a both and. We're probably gonna start you on a medication and exercise if you're not exercising, but we're hoping once again that we prevent all this, right? That we go back and we exercise, and because we're exercising and we're following the physical activity guidelines, we do not have to get in this situation. But overall, surprise, surprise, exercise is good for bone health. The ideal situation is that we live a healthy and active life and never get an issue with this, right? So, but if we do this, we're going to do this by combining our training, right? We're going to have normal, you know, aerobic activity and resistance training, and it just becomes a part of our normal life. And as we know, for bone mineral density, it takes years to kind of get there. So just by having this be a normal part of your life, that's where we're going to have most likely the biggest effects. But however, if we do get in trouble, or if you're already there, meaning you have osteoporosis, osteopenia, exercise should be your first line. It's safe to do, and there's pretty much no side effects, unlike medications, because these medications do have real side effects. One of the medication side effects is osteonecrosis of the jaw, which is kind of breaking down of some of the jawbone. And that is a very real side effect that we've seen people have. And so exercise, much, much smaller side effect profile. So that's one to be our first line. Like I talk about all the time, exercise or lifestyle changes are always going to be the first line. And then we use our medications as needed, kind of fill in the gaps in high risk patients. But overall, it's going to be a joint decision who wants this on. But overall, that's going to be it for today. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. If you want to get updated anytime I release something new, please sign join up my mailing list. We have a link in the description below to kind of do that. I promise I won't send spam because I hate spam, but I really appreciate you stopping by today. Now get off your phone, get outside. Have a good rest of your day. Disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment, education, and informational purposes only. The topics discussed should not solely be used to diagnose, treat, or prevent any condition. The information presented here was created with an evidence-based approach, but please keep in mind that science is always changing, and at the time of listening to this, there may be some new data that makes this information incomplete or inaccurate. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or qualified healthcare provider for questions regarding any medical condition.